Cosmo Sheldrake. Mit Riggo auf Flux FM am Freitagnachmittag. Heute Abend wird der britische Multi-Instrumentalist im schönen Lido aufspielen. Jetzt ist er erstmal bei mir im Studio und wir quatschen über Field Recordings, also Aufnahmen von Umgebungs- und Tiergeräuschen als Inspirationsquelle und den vielleicht auch ökologischen Aspekt seines Werkes. Wir finden heraus, warum man sich als Siebenjährige dem Blues zuwendet, sprechen über die Transparenz, mit der er seine Musik dem Publikum erklärt und über vieles mehr. Zunächst aber heißt es nochmal Hello and welcome Cosmo Sheldrake. Hello once again. Sorry, I didn't put your mic on. Now now people can hear you. So how are you doing today? Where are you coming from?
Yeah, really good. Coming from Hamburg.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you've played a show there?
Yeah, I've been in Hamburg and then before that in Cologne and then before that in Munich and then before that in Austria.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, really fun.
Yeah. Congratulations on the Much Much How and I. Your debut LP has finally been released. How does it feel to finally let go after, I mean, you've worked on that for 3 years or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, more, yeah. So, yeah, it's incredibly satisfying, yeah. A massive release.
Well, when one's working on an album for such a long time, one might get lost in music or get lost in the details. When did you realize that you had put together enough layers and how hard was getting rid of some of them maybe?
That's always the hardest bit. Really. Mm. You end up just making so much stuff. And then, yeah, the hardest thing is when you've got the whole thing in your vision and you have to try and make the thing one rather than lots of little bits. So yeah, that was definitely the hardest part. I think what I did was just set myself some really clear deadlines and booked in a session to mix it and all the studio time. And so I had to get everything ready by then. So yeah, it was a kind of slow process.
But during the mixing process, one has to kill one's darlings a lot, right?
It's
like, oh, my favorite layer is the sound of this and that animal. And then you'd be like, yeah, but frequency-wise, it might be disturbing. So we have to get... I don't know how that was.
Absolutely. There's a recording of a pig that I use quite a lot in the record as a bass sound. And that was the first thing to go just because it's got such like... So like, yeah, such a thick sound. So I was always struggling to try and bring the pig back up.
But Matthew Herbert, who's used to working with pigs,
I know.
Dead pigs though,
I know.
He kind of forced you to get rid of that signal.
In one tune, yeah, particularly, yeah.
It's too alive, man. Sounds too alive. That's interesting though. Oh man. You love incorporating natural sounds into your recordings. I mean, we've just talked about the fact that there's many animals on the record and that you've used a pig for bass sounds. And you've done a lot of field recordings over the last few years. When did you come up with the idea? How did you come up with the idea to just, I mean, the idea of recording something in the field, that's something that might just happen because you stand there, you're a musician, your ears are open, you'd be like, wow, I'm standing in a field right now and it sounds, let's just record it.
Totally.
When did you realize that those recordings might be a good starting point to do a composition from or to get inspired by?
I think it started about 8, 9, 10 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And I was traveling, I was about 18, yeah. I was traveling in Canada around in British Columbia one summer. And I'd brought a portable recorder with me. And it was just a way of sort of journaling, really. It was like taking photos or something. It's just like sonic journaling. And then I came back and decided to make a piece of music out of all the recordings I'd made just as a way of kind of remembering the summer. So I did that. And, you know, even when I hear it now, it's just like I can remember sitting there eating some chips with my friend as she was imitating a mountain lion. And that ends up in there. And so, yeah, so it was a way of just bringing back memories and remembering time, really. But yeah. And then it developed from there. Yeah.
I think it would be interesting to force people who are using their smartphones now all the time to take pictures of everything, to stop doing that and recording sounds instead of that. You know? Because it triggers totally different things in your head.
Totally.
And it still works as something that you can remember the vacation by or something.
If anything, it's more alive because you remember time more. You remember the passing of time more. It's, you can feel more back in the moment, I think, with the sound and the picture.
Yeah. And then another step towards this album maybe was the TED Talk you gave called Interspecies Collaboration. You've used owl sounds and kind of jammed with the owls live on stage. And that was another step, I think, towards the musical philosophy of Cosmo Sheldrake. So that was an important step, I think, for what you do now.
Definitely. I mean, I must admit, since calling it collaboration, I've thought about it a bit more and I realized I didn't really get full consent from the owls, you know. So I think it might have been a bit forward of me to call it collaboration. But But yeah, no, I definitely like, I think it's important to, you know, bring lots of sounds together from different areas. And also in a world where increasingly a lot of animals and, you know, we're living through a mass extinction currently. So the world is getting not quieter, but, you know, certainly the biodiversity and animal sounds are, you know, dying. You know, we've lost 50% of all animal life in, God knows, in, since about 50, 60 years ago. So, so from that perspective, you know, they're getting drowned out by machinery and all sorts of other stuff, and particularly in the ocean. So I think it's just important to kind of to celebrate these voices, which are increasingly quieter.
And then the work of Cosmo Sheldrake becomes the work of an artivist, I think, because you combine activism with the arts, because it's eco-activism kind of what you're doing.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Sound-wise.
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
And what you say is totally true. I mean, there's, especially with the extinct of so many insects, there are less birds in the cities, and they're already parts of big cities in Europe where you can't hear many birds anymore, or not as many as when I was a kid or something.
Absolutely. I mean, if you were to compare the average songbirds of, say, a tree outside your house when you were growing up to now, it'd be a very different thing you'd be hearing, for sure. Yeah.
Now, you've told an interviewer once that the inspiration for a song often comes from the natural sound that was at the very beginning. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah, often it's just, I'll start with, I mean, I remember one time I was staying in this tower on a beach in Suffolk, trying to, just doing a residency, and there was a howling gale. There was all this wind coming through the door, and the door had a crack in it, and the wind started playing the door like a reed. So it was just vibrating. So I recorded the sound of that and then just listened back to it, and it had its own little melody, you know, just the way the wind going. So I just took the melody and developed that. Or yeah, other things, just, you know, throw a rock at a stick and the way it bounces will come up with its own melody, and you'll start from that melody as a rhythmic idea and develop from that. So
So sometimes you sit on a computer and nothing comes to mind. You play with a few synth sounds and a few, you play the guitar or the piano for a while, and you're like, I don't come up with something. And then you go back to the field recordings library, and then find something there, and you cut it up.
Yeah, I find otherwise I sort of often go around in circles, or muscle memory kicks in, you know, and you just sort of do the same thing again and again and again.
True.
So yeah, this is a way of just sort of adding an unexpected element into.
So there's a cut up collage technique that you're using for the music. Do you use that for the lyrics as well?
I have done, yeah. I mean, that's how the album title came from.
That's something that one could have talked about as well. True.
Yeah, definitely. I really like collage. I do. I mean, I make visual collages too. I find them just, I love the process. It's just like taking things out of context and putting them in new context. It's like kind of storytelling, I guess.
There's a psychological level to it, I think, as well, especially with the collages that you make out of pictures. Some psychologists will be like, here's some material, do a collage and I'll tell you what's wrong with you.
I'm sure.
Or maybe what's right with you, I don't know.
Yeah, totally. No, I think it's just because you start with something, you don't have to do it all yourself. You know, if you're then with a pen and paper, it's just a very different process. But this is kind of like half of it's given, you know, and then you're just rearranging it. For me, it just seems easier, you know, I find it much easier.
Yeah, and sometimes you write down something and then you cut it up and rearrange it and something totally different comes up.
Absolutely, it's just a different kind of logic, you know. You access different logics, different ways of thinking that you never normally do, you know. So, most of the things I've made have just been a complete surprise to me, you know. I wouldn't have been able to come up with them myself. It's just like some sort of almost random
process. Yeah, nice, though. I think it's there's two ways of making art. Some artists are like, I have this goal and it's a really definite goal. I just want to get right there. Mm-hmm. And then they work towards it until they have arrived. Mm-hmm. And then there's the other way, and it's let's just see what's going to happen, right?
Yeah, totally, yeah.
And I've read that you come up with the results sometimes that surprise you as well.
Oh, all the time, yeah, all the time. I think some of my favorite things have all been a complete shock to me.
What? Who composed this music?
Yeah, exactly.
Was it me?
It feels like that sometimes, yeah.
That's good, though. Let's listen to another song, and then we talk a bit more, and then we'll give away some tickets for tonight's show. Cosmo Sheldrake, nochmal mit Come Along auf Flux FM. Come Along, Cosmo Sheldrake auf Flux FM. Basically, when a song stops, a Cosmo Sheldrake song stops, one wants to know which signals have been used, which was the craziest signal recorded in Come Along. Do you remember? Yeah. Or is that like a conservative approach?
I don't know. There's definitely more. I mean, there's lots of sounds in there. There's a recording of the sun made by an astrophysicist. There's
The sun has a deep kind of
gong-like sound.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like you can get lots of different. I mean, sometimes when you listen to the sun or radio astronomers, they just get kind of white noise and static.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, so it's up for interpretation, really, because you end up with just like huge amounts of data, and then you have to turn it into a sound. So
yeah.
It depends on how you do that, really. but there's all sorts in there. Yeah, I don't know. Oh, there's a Hoover, a vacuum cleaner.
Oh, nice.
There's an amazing kind of hillbilly kind of body percussion called hamboning.
Okay.
Which is where you kind of slap yourself and make some hilarious kind of rhythm. So there's a bit of that in there. My friend playing the Armenian duduk in a folk session in a pub in Sussex.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah, all sorts.
I'm asking as well because you are really transparent when it comes to explaining the sounds that you're using. Mm-hmm. Why is that important to you?
I mean, I guess I just think it's really important to kind of explain your process, let people in a bit, you know. Mm-hmm. It kind of breaks this image of this thing as a glossy, final, kind of almost like commodified sort of end product.
Yeah.
And it makes it much more achievable, really. It's like you can see into it more. I've got a friend who's a kind of radical seamstress who teaches kids mathematics.
Oh, yeah, I've read about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she teaches kids maths from making clothes, you know, and they learn about geometry. And she always leaves her seams on the outside just so you can kind of see how it's made. So I just think it's really important just to kind of show your workings. You know what I mean? It makes something much more understandable. You let somebody in a bit more. It's more inviting, maybe.
Yeah. And it's explaining a bit of the whole process, and so people can understand it easier, I think.
Yeah. And also it adds an extra level to the music as well. Because, I mean, you can understand it and listen to it just on the surface level of just how it sounds, you know.
Yeah.
But then there's an extra storyline going on underneath it, you know.
Yeah.
There's a reason why this sound is used with that sound.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think it can just adds another layer to it.
And I really love the fact that you were inspired to do that by a seamstress.
Yeah.
Another interesting approach.
Yeah.
And then as I just said, some people are really asking themselves, how does Cosmo Sheldrake come up with stuff like that? And I can explain it a little bit because I've read some facts about your life.
Mm-hmm.
Your dad and your brother are biologists, they're mm-hmm. philosophers and historians, and your dad's playing the piano too, and he's in love with Bach.
Yeah,
he's playing Bach all the time. Your mom does teach Mongolian overtone chanting.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
thingy.
Yeah.
And that's interesting too. She's worked with Karlheinz Stockhausen,
mm-hmm.
one of the main composers for new music. Mm-hmm. Basically, you've started playing the piano with four. You've studied anthropology and ethnomusicology, and you've collected instruments since you were about 17 years old.
Yeah.
That's how you get into the world of Cosmo Sheldrake, I think.
I guess so, yeah.
And then another thing that I found out, and that's really interesting for me, is that you started playing the piano with four, and then you discovered the blues when you were about seven.
Yeah.
And I was like, these parents sound nice. How did he come up with playing the blues when he was seven?
Well, we had a neighbor, actually, who lived just up the street, and she was a bit older, and she just started learning blues piano, and she came around one time and just started playing this boogie-woogie.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I want to do that, you know. So we just got the same teacher, really, and it was this amazing, inspired teacher who just taught himself how to play about 5 years before he taught us. And so he kind of, it was so fresh in his mind, he could communicate it so quickly just because he knew all the hard things, all the things that he'd just gone through.
Yeah.
So yeah, just started playing all by ear and just started playing blue. He was obsessed with New Orleans music, so he kind of just started playing New Orleans kind of piano stuff. And yeah.
And you went there once, right? To New Orleans?
I went there a couple of years ago, yeah, to Mardi Gras with my brother and our friend James, yeah.
Wow.
So fun.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
Absolute madness, yeah.
But it's interesting though, because the blues is a good, it's a nice structure that one can learn as a young musician and then play along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's good to know about the blues to be able to ignore the structure, right?
Totally. And it's just it's a really simple way of learning how to improvise and explore and have confidence just to mess around, you know, because it is such a simple structure, but then there's so much you can do on top of that. So, I found, I think it gave me a really solid foundation for sure.
Cool. But I was imagining, because I always, when I was like in my 20s and people started, when I was jamming with people and they started blues chords
mm-hmm.
or playing with blues chords, I was like, come on, that's music for old men. Let's come up with something new.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Something fresh. Let's forget about that.
Yeah.
Then I imagined you being like a 7-year-old, totally into a sad blues session on your own, you know. It was like, man, those parents, they were so nice to him all over the years, and then he starts playing the blues. I was like, what did we do wrong? Cosmo, come on. You're able to play over 30 instruments, I think, right?
Well, I just don't know, really. I've I mean, I just kind of, I collect them, and it's a bit of a spectrum, you know. Some are better than others, and some, I kind of see them as families. Once you learn the banjo, then it's similar technique or muscle memory to a guitar, and then you can move from that to a mandolin a bit, which is the same tuning as a violin. So once you get them, and then once you got the violin, you kind of, you're familiar with the thing. You play the viola and a bit, move kind of towards the cello, you know. So it's like, some things I'm much better at than others, but I definitely gather and collect instruments enough to be able to record and write simple things with them and stuff.
And but did it all started because you had an interest for the instruments as objects, right? Because you just liked how they looked. And
well,
then,
I think they're incredible machines. You know, they're beautiful, beautiful, elegant objects that to design something based on its acoustic properties, I think, is a really thing. You're looking at the kind of physical properties of sound in an object, you know. So I've always found them really quite mysterious and amazing. And they're always, you know, they have to be brought to life, you know. You're looking at this thing which is only half there until somebody breathes through it.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, it's a dead object, and then it just comes completely to life the second someone sits down at it. So it's I think there's something really mysterious about them.
Yeah, I mean, it's I like the approach once again, because you just bought those instruments and like, well, that looks nice. Let's see if I'm going to be able to play it, and then you just tried.
I know, it turned into a bit of a kind of, I ended up going a bit mad on the bass instruments. I bought a double bass, and then very shortly after that, a sousaphone, and then. And then a bass clarinet, and my dad started complaining after a while, because all these, like, the space, he hates clutter, and I was sort of coming back with these massive instruments.
Yeah, sure. But you can dive into that field and really get lost because it's not only interesting to learn how to play those instruments, it's also interesting where to put the microphone so they sound nice and stuff.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's really interesting.
It's science, for sure.
So what are your plans for the near future? I mean, you're touring now, obviously, but you've written for theater and film and TV and stuff.
Yeah.
Are you planning to do something into that direction? Are you looking for another field recording session soon, or?
Well, at the moment, actually, I've got a few things on the go. One thing I'm doing is making very short abstract interpretations of the album.
Nice.
I'm doing a kind of miniature mashup. And then I'm making music for alarm clocks, actually, for just like...
What?
For alarm sounds, just music from birdsong to kind of wake up to or something.
Nice.
I'm thinking quite a lot about functional music for like different periods of the day, like music to go to sleep to, music to wake up to, music to do different things to, you know, to have baths to and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So that's something I'm working on, is kind of music for different times of day.
It sounds interesting too. It sounds like an artwork already, or like a piece of art.
Yeah, I guess, you know? Something that can accompany you, you know, music that can accompany, if you're sitting there driving along, it's just like, you know, a different time of day, what should I listen to? Something that's like well suited to that kind of energy or mood. So that's something I'm thinking about. But yeah, I've got a few things on the go, really.
Yeah, cool. Do you let us know as soon as you've done something something new? We
sure.
want to talk about that.
Absolutely.
And we want to present it to the people.
Good.
You do the music on your own still, right? I mean, you could do it with a large orchestra. One can't afford that nowadays.
Certainly not.
But you've brought some dancers with you.
Yeah, I've got a small dance troupe, yeah.
Nice. I love that. So I want to wish you the best of luck for tonight. Show.
Thank you very much.
For everything that you've planned for the near future. And as soon as you come back to Berlin, you can visit us.
Thank you.
Again, you're always invited. Cosmo Sheldrake hier nochmal zu hören mit Birthday Suit. 15:41 Uhr hört die Morning Show am Nachmittag. Thank you, Cosmo. Bye.
Thank you.